Time for Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we take an in-depth and closer look at this beloved television series, the spin-offs on TV, audio and in print, even the underpants, all that fantastic merchandise. Doctor Who's a global fandom phenomenon that has shaped the landscape of science fiction and fantasy for well over five decades. Step into our TARDIS and share our journey together here on Type 40. Welcome to another Type 40, where we try and make an hour of your time will seem much, much longer. Talking all things Hooniverse, I am Dan Hadley. I'm your regular Type 40 pilot and a lifelong Doctor Who fan, maybe as you are, but maybe not. Could be you're quite new to the show, maybe you're a casual fan, maybe you've been away for a while and you're just sort of rediscovering your love of Doctor Who, one version or another, and that's fine too. There's no gatekeeping here, only conversation, only fun and games, which, as it would happen, that sums up my guest for this edition of the show. I feel in the presence of podcasting royalty here as I'm sat down with the one and only, the Fantha from Down Under, the man with the sonic mullet today. It's Adam O'Brien. Welcome aboard.
G'day, mate. How you going? How are you? Hey there, Whovient Universe. The mullet is here.
How many incarnations of Adam O'Brien have I got with me this afternoon then?
Oh, you must have a few, because I mean you can have Arnold here too if you like. That's not the problem. We can have Country Adam. Country Adam's here. Am I going? How are you? Got yourself Foster's Lager there, mate. Play the real football, the one where we don't just kick it.
There you go. It's going to be like the five doctors of podcasting, all with just the two of us. And my next question, Adam, is going to be, how are you?
I'm doing really, really well, actually. And I'm really excited to talk Who today, because one thing out here, Australia is very much tied up in Doctor Who, not in just the creation of the TV show itself and the characters and all that, but just the legacy. And particularly out here, the Australian Broadcasting Commission, which we will talk about tonight, has a big part in spreading the Whovian message.
Absolutely. I mean, I should have, you know, in case you hadn't noticed, Adam is from Australia. And yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, Australian television and British television has pretty much gone hand in hand for decades now, hasn't it? And, you know, with fandoms as well, it's been pretty much the same story. So I know we're going to have a lot to talk about, lots of insight from you, lots of things certainly that I know that I'm not going to have heard before. But before we get into all that, Adam, where will people know you from? Where will people have heard that voice and the other voices before?
So I go way back into the first round of podcasting you guys probably know me from is Jogcast Radio Network, back in the early days of podcasting, with Star Wars Jogcast and many other shows. And then led on to Ausfans Radio Network, my own network, which I had for several years. And, of course, this is how we know Kevin and Kyle are co-founders of Fandom Podcast Network. And, of course, from there, we went on to learning about the new network that Kevin and Kyle are putting together. And I joined them with Lethal Mullet Podcast, which is a celebration of 1980s action films. We do everything from Norris to Van Damme to Sylvester Stallone, hey, yo, Adrian, you know, all the way through to, of course, the current classics as well. We talk about, yeah, shall we say, John Wick. Of course, we've got to say Wick because yeah. Kevin, guess what? Like, how can you not see John Wick, man? Come on. John Wick's the best, man. Even though the same guy is playing Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan. But we've got to say, on their network, yeah, so I've joined them there and had a lot of fun, of course, along with yourselves on this massive, beautiful ball of fun we call Fandom Podcast Network. Also, on Fandom Podcast Network, we also have done a lot of Culture Clash and Couch Potato with them too and celebrating all forms of fandom. But with Mark Newbold and the boys over at the Star Wars end of things, I am part of Fanthatrax. I'm the Australian ambassador for Fanthatrax and also the Fantha from Down Under. So that's a bit of a mouthful, but you can find my shows over there as well. And very soon, Mark Newbold and I will be heading to the Trek universe, to the final frontier of podcasting with Making Treks as well. So it's kind of a pun on Making Tracks, which is his Star Wars one that he
has. Ah, I've got it. It takes a while for a penny to drop with me, but I do get it now. So the answer to the question, where will people have heard you, is pretty much everywhere.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, I used to do I even did a Stargate podcast for a while there, because Stargate's a massive passion of mine as well, which has time travel in it as well. But what's great about that, I used to do that with Rob Wainford from Wales, who runs the BeardedTrio.com, which is George Lucas, has Steven Spielberg, and of course it has the one, the only John Williams on there as a celebration in a website. Now, I've got to say it, because Rob will be saying, mate, why haven't you said it? The greatest film tied into all that is, of course, Jaws 4, isn't it, Rob? Rob, are you listening tonight? Rob, Jaws the Revenge with Michael Caine. Yeah, look, there's a shark over there. Oh, shit. Jeez, look at the shark. It's going to kill me. It's going to cut my legs off.
Rob, if you are listening to this, my friend, I know we've never met, but you are allowed a right of reply. You're welcome to come on and correct him if you want.
You know he's going to, anyway.
I've heard Rob, I know where he is, just over in the Welsh border. Whether he likes Doctor Who or not, he's invited on any time. So Adam's kindly crossed dimensions and crossed franchises to join us, to talk to us today. But before we get stuck into all that, there's some fixed points here in time and space we're duty-bound to remind you of, because it's the Fandom Podcast Network. And you can find each and every edition of our show, past, present and future, on the FPNet Master Feed at fpnetpodbean.com and FPNet on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network's also on iTunes, on Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now fully loaded, Adam, fully loaded on Spotify. On Spotify, of all places. There's nowhere. We're within everybody's reach. There's our social media presence itself on Instagram. The Fandom Podcast Network's got its own account. You can find that. Or the Type 41. It's at Type 40, DR Who. And there's our fantastic, regenerated, fully stocked Type 40, a Doctor Who fandom group, which is on Facebook. It's growing all the time. Adam, you've recently joined. You're regaling us with lots of your artwork, lots of fun and games there. And yeah, we're just helping each other, helping one another through what is a bit of a gap year for Doctor Who. Even when there's no news, which is, let's face it, most of the time, we find things to talk about, we find things to share, we run polls, and we just geek out. We just basically geek out. Adam, where can people find you? Where can they get in touch with you?
So the best way, apart from fantatracks.com, you can find me over there. You can find us also, obviously, fmnet.podbean.com with Lethal Mullet, along with, of course, Type 40 and all the other great shows. But if you want to catch me, have a bit of a gas bag, a bit of a chin wag, as we say now in Australia, mm-hmm. share a beer, share a lager, talk about how good rugby is compared to soccer, because it is, then you can also go to at Obi Pop Culture. I dare you to try me on that too, boys and girls.
There you go. Find me everywhere. And you can find me on Instagram. I'm as Dan Hadley _, where I share just geeky things and things from day-to-day life, which for me is pretty much one of the same. You know, geeky life is day-to-day life. And on top of that, you can find me in the Spacebook on Facebook, which is another social media group, sort of similar to the Type 41, but it's wide open. It's all the other franchises, the movies, the TV, the comics, the books, audio, drama and gaming. We're talking about it all in there. Presently, it's a bit of a support group for people who've just recovered from the Game of Thrones finale and how that all played out. We're still wiping tears away from that, but there's plenty of places to come and find us and come and have a chat. And when you come for all that, you may want to dress the part. I can't forget that. You may want to drop by the Tee Public Store, the Fandom Podcast Network Tee Public Store. You can come and support all our endeavours, wear some of these fantastic original designs. Their logos are on T-shirts, they're on mugs, they're on hats, and whatever you could care to mention, it's all there. And it's on the teepublic.com/user/Fandom Podcast Network page. Just search for the Fandom Podcast Network to go.
There's some
right
great shirts in there too, folks. Go and check
it
out.
Really are.
Because there's even some new shirts that have just been added there, which I think are fantastic. We've got obviously all the logos in there, all the great shows, Fandom Podcast itself. But I've just been told that Raider Nerd's got a shirt up there that said Raider Nerd loves rugby. So that's going to be great. You've got to check it out, because we know how he's now converted from the shoulder pad wearing and helmet wearing football, weird stuff that the Americans do, and now he's finally going mano a mano, rugby style. No protection.
Kevin, What can I say, my friend? I'm sorry. So we're here with Adam, and as you could probably tell, you've heard his shows. You've just had 5 minutes with him now. This could go pretty much anywhere, which, as we're in the TARDIS, that kind of fits. I think we'll start on some tried and tested ground, Adam. You know, we want to talk about Doctor Who and you, Doctor Who in Australia, but we're going to start with some of those frequently asked questions that not just fans ask one another, but a lot of the things that the general public talk about with regard to Doctor Who, this long legacy on television too. And they're questions that virtually everybody, whether they count themselves as a fan of the show or not, we've all got answers in the back pocket, really, haven't we? And the most obvious one, I think, is when did you first start watching Doctor Who, you personally?
Easily, probably about 81 or 82 would have been. I remember years ago moving from Sydney in Australia to Brisbane, and it was a stage where I was just starting to, you know, I would have been about probably 3 or 4 years old at the time, but we're starting to get used to rhythmic patterns of television. So, and this was showing on, as we've mentioned before, the ABC network. So it's the Australian version of the BBC, basically, run by the government. And anyway,
you don't pay. Does it carry advertising, or do you pay a license fee?
There's no licensing for TV here in Australia. I'm familiar with how the UK has it, but with ours, it's paid through taxes.
Gotcha.
So it's a little bit different that way. We're one of the highest tax countries in the world, so it's probably in there somewhere. I'd say. it was through basically afternoons. I remember my father coming home, and he'd be waiting for the ABC's 4 o'clock news to pop on. And so he'd come home, put that on, and then as soon as the news finished, I'd be waiting for Voltron to start, which was an anime that came over from Japan. And so it would be Doctor Who for about half an hour, and they'd split some of the episodes up into two parts, so you'd see the next part on the next day. So if you watch it Monday, you'd catch it on Tuesdays. And then at 5:30, along came Voltron. And for Voltron fans, we actually got the vehicle force first. So it's even backwards that way too. We didn't get Lion Voltron first. So everything's backwards in Australia because it's down under.
So you only came across Doctor Who whilst you're waiting for another show completely.
Yeah, that's right. And it's happened a number of times where, and then I get sucked into it. So I was sucked into watching it. It was the,
because it becomes habit, doesn't it? When you're used to a bit of a ritual. You know, British people know that only too well. That's why we have a fit when anybody moves it away from Saturdays. So if you would, you want to be there, it's like a menu, isn't it? Stretching out in front of you.
And
if it's 5 days a week, it must have been even more so. So you've got Voltron, and Doctor Who, and what else was in that?
Monkey Magic, which was probably my all-time favourite as a kid, which again, BBC did the great sound work on that. And till this day, it's one of the highest loved shows out here in Australia. Probably you're on a par with Doctor Who. And if you go to JB Hi-Fi DVD place out here in Australia, it's still selling the two seasons, because there's only two seasons of that show, for about $200. And that's only on DVD, not Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's a big cult success. It's not something that the man in the street really talks about anymore, certainly anybody under 30, but it was a huge cultural impact to my generation too when it first came on. It was shown on BBC Two, but it had that kind of appeal and the imagery that kind of taps into what we love so much about Doctor Who. And it was, I think it was a few years old by the time we were seeing it, and some of the special effects were, you know, already looking a bit dated. But, you know, Doctor Who fans, we know all about that. So, you know, it's you're playing to the right crowd, really. Is there any specific episode of Doctor Who, even you may know the name, you may just have a vague memory that you remember first?
I remember the first episode was a Dalek episode that I saw, and I remember because one of the lines I said to my dad, and he still, before he passed, he always used to pay me out with Star Wars. He said, "You always thought that was R2-D2 in camouflage, didn't you?" So I remember a red Dalek and a black Dalek. That's the as a kid, that's what I remember more.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was a Sylvester McCoy episode, perhaps.
It sounds a lot like. Well, at first I wondered if it was a Pertwee one from much earlier, but it does sound like a Remembrance of the Daleks with Sylvester McCoy from 88. That would certainly tally up with a lot of that. But those memories, they do sort of stay with us, don't they? And they
do.
Particularly when we're young, they sort of burn themselves into the backs of our minds. And we don't need to know the titles. They just kind of stay there. And, you know, it could be 10, 20 years before we see those episodes again, particularly if you might count yourself as a casual fan. But, I mean, the fact that it's, I think with a lot of people, it's the Daleks. I think something because of the visuals combined with the voice, it makes you sit up and pay attention. If you're in the same room, you know, and you've never seen them before, you're going to look directly at the television to see what on earth that was, even if you think, oh, God, is that R2-D2 or whatever?
the voice got you straight away, that exterminate, exterminate. You know what I mean? You can imagine if you put another voice to it, you put a straining voice on that. Exterminate, mate! Come on, get him! Exterminate! It's not going to work the same. It just had that iconic feel. But what it got me is, you know, you got your those characters, but also the Master, were through the whole run of the series that we've seen different incarnations of. But one thing that's been there the whole time, when I've caught it, whether it's a year here or a couple of years later on the ABC here and there, I've always been able to catch it where they've had the strings of those tapestries of the story come up and the various incarnations of the Doctor place those. But I think the more, as we said before, the flamboyant sort of style that John Pertwee had was what something that really, for me, I think as a kid went, hey, that guy is actually very cool.
I think that with Pertwee, that very particular brand of heroism that he represented was at the time, and we're talking about, it was 1970 when John Pertwee made his debut. But I gather from what I know, from what little I do know about Doctor Who in Australia, that the John Pertwee era was rerun pretty much throughout the 70s and all the way through the 80s.
It was.
So, and this was in tandem with new material starring Tom Baker, Peter Davison, Colin Baker, and by the sounds of it, Sylvester McCoy. So is John Pertwee, is when you think of the Doctor, that's the Doctor, that's my Doctor, who immediately springs to your mind?
From my youth, it's definitely Pertwee. Like, without a doubt, it's Pertwee. Just because I think he's more prevalent. Like, those episodes were run so often all the way through the 80s, right up to about 87. Those were on almost every couple of months. They would run his season.
Why do you think that was? What appealed particularly about that version of the character to you?
I think it's just a very iconic figure, you know, like he stands out in the I suppose the dress that he had. It's almost like that pirate shirt look, you know, and everything like that he had. The hair.
Yeah.
To us Aussies, it looks surfy because he had that sort of hair.
Yeah, I can see that. I can get that.
Far cry from his son, who has always got the shaved head. Shout out to Sean, who I think is just a bloody legend. He's awesome. You know, and it's too bad that he doesn't want to take up the mantle. I mean, I don't know if he's ever been offered, but I mean, it would really be a chip off the old block if he ever did it.
He's talked about it quite recently, in fact, you know, and sort of he's been very humble about it. You know, he's very flattered to be mentioned in the same breath as it. And I gather that he would love to be on the show, you know, and I think a lot of Doctor Who fans would love to have him on the show. There's a huge amount of support. People who feel exactly the same way you do, who would love to see him in the lead role, but most of us would just love to have him there in any capacity whatsoever. He did dress up for his own Instagram feed a couple of Halloweens ago as the Third Doctor, with the wig and the cape, brandishing the sonic at the camera, and it was spookily like his dad, because obviously as we've noticed, anybody who's followed his career, he's got more and more similarity to John Pertwee in the face. As he's got older, he's got a little bit craggier. And you're right, you know, he never lets his hair grow above a grey too, does he?
No, that's right.
You know, with the wig, you know, he really did. He really did look the part. When I think about, because I did wonder, because John Pertwee, he was the man of action. He's the gadget Doctor, but very, very flamboyant. He's not a rugged type. He's not, on the surface of it, you could say he's not particularly overtly heroic and masculine, but he's always in control, isn't he? And he's always...
Yeah, he's the Roger Moore. He's the Roger Moore of the Doctor Who's. That's who he is. Yeah. In comparison to, say, trying to think who, well, who's the Connery of the bunch? But anyway, out of the gadgets, you know, I mean, that's what Roger Moore used to do, you know. He'd always be after, you know, the more spiced up cars with all the tricks of the Lotus and all that sort of stuff.
He's very suave. I think the word is suave.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Whereas Sean was like, you know, you just get that guy over there and smash him, you know. You know, it was more brute, you know. And I think that's the difference. Roger Moore had sophistication. And without a doubt, John had that.
Yeah, I think that's fairly apparent. And I think he was like that in his day-to-day life as well, just as Roger Moore was. I mean, most of the Doctors have played versions of themselves into the part. And there was a lot of wish fulfillment for Pertwee in the role. You know, we now know several years after his death that, for example, he'd worked for the Secret Service during the Second World War. We're finding out new things about John Pertwee's remarkable life all the time. He's fascinating, and it's very romantic and very mysterious. And I'd like to think that we'll never know absolutely everything. But Doctor Who in Australia, I mean, I've been looking into various things about it and reading up about it over the years because Australian broadcasting fits in with Doctor Who in a very, very specific way. You mentioned the ABC earlier on. They were very, very quick to because of their relationship with the BBC. They were very, very quick to adopt Doctor Who. I think they were, if not the first, certainly the second at most country and channel to buy the show at all, to get right on it. And it was immediately, this would have been like 64, I think it was in 64, and they did what any responsible broadcaster would do. They put it before their censorship board, and they immediately said no and wouldn't let them show it. They wouldn't let them show it for the best part of a year. They'd got a big plan about where they wanted to show it and for who, but the Australian Broadcasting Film Censorship Board, they awarded an adult certification. So my note says here. And it was held over until January 1965. There you go. Whilst they excised sometimes little clips here and there, sometimes they vetoed entire stories from being broadcast. But it eventually came on screen in 1965. And it didn't, for all intents and purposes, it didn't ever really stop. They showed all of the black and white stuff, with the exception of a special one-off Christmas episode, which didn't get showed anywhere in the world apart from in the UK. And I think that's where it seems to have embedded itself into Australian culture in almost exactly the same way that it did over here. I mean, is it viewed as part of, if not Australian culture, then a shared culture? How do you think it's viewed by the general population?
I think it is too. Like, you know, well, especially, I think it's interesting when American fans, for example, ask, you know, do you guys know about Doctor Who? Because they said, because wasn't it part of Australian British upbringing? I said, well, yeah. Like, it's almost in tandem. So there's an outside of Australia, people know that Doctor Who's had such a long life out here as well as the UK. But I think what's interesting is they know that it's been here for 50 years as well.
Well, it is almost its entire lifespan. And I mean, as I'm sure you know, for a long time, we got a lot of Australian programming back in the UK, and there would often be mentions of Daleks and TARDISes and Cybermen, and Doctor Who himself would be dropped into programs like Neighbours and Home and Away, and all that kind of television. So, you know, and I think it's one of the reasons why our television crossed the hemispheres the way it did for such a long time. It was all part of this kind of shared affection. I think there's the Australian audience just get the fact that it's not necessarily meant to be taken 100% seriously, that it's fun and that it's something for the whole family. a family audience, as you say, shown in a family time slot on a mainstream channel. Whereas, for example, in the US, or through when it was shown through the 70s, it was on public broadcasting television, often very late at night. So it's a very different sort of equation. It's a very culty thing, whereas it is mainstream, as mainstream for you as it is for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I totally agree. I think that's the access of us being able to see it after school, or, you know, for me, also after university, when I was at art mm-hmm. college, we got to see, particularly rerunning the Paul McGann Doctor Who movie, which for you listeners out there, I've got to say is probably my favourite version of it, because I like to see him outside of his, I suppose, I hate to say TV surrounds. I mean, let's face it, Doctor Who was shot in the UK. You're seeing a UK background and all of those. It's good to see it sort of outside of that, just to sort of throw, like a fish out of water stories are the most exciting ways to tell stories. And in that case, it really is a fish out of water, going to San Francisco, et cetera, like that. But also, Paul McGann's one of my favourite actors from Alien 3, which is the best of the Alien movies, by the way, folks, because Fincher did it. Fincher walked out. It's absolute chaos. And the opening, if you watch the work cut or the work print, is actually at the docks where they made the Titanic. So there you go. You'll love that. But what I've got to say is what I love about it being shown when it was out here in Australia is that you got to see the story evolve. You got to see, you know, if you caught it one day, you're catching it next, because a lot of the
over
time,
over the week, 5 days.
Yeah, 5 days. Monday to Friday it was shown. And this is what they did for a lot of the American shows as well. Monkey Magic as well. We used to have The Goodies, which you probably remember that.
Yeah, BBC comedy show from the 70s, yeah.
And then we also had, the Monty Python show was shown at about 7 o'clock because they didn't want the young kids seeing it.
Oh, so that's quite early. I don't think it was shown until 9 o'clock over here. When you talk about they didn't want... Yeah, it really was. So when you talk about they didn't want the kids seeing it, you know, I mentioned the Film Censorship Board earlier on. You know, we had the Viewers and Listeners Association in the UK led by the late, great Mary Whitehouse. We miss you, Mary. No, we don't, but we... she meant well. You know, so when we talk about film censorship, was censorship with Doctor Who? I mean, does that surprise you? Did it seem to you like quite a graphic show, even with what was left behind? Did you hide behind the sofa? Did your classmates talk about it in that sense when you were a child?
No, and I think that's the thing, is what we talked about was the adventure of it, you know, but what the Doctor was going through. There was never anything about somebody being in peril or something graphic that we saw. And I think that goes for a lot of the shows. I think that the most talked about was, you know, if you equate it to another show, it was The Monkey Show, where we're talking about how does all of a sudden the dragon turn into a horse, then turn into a man. So, you know, it was conversational, like how does the story evolve? How does the Doctor get into this predicament where he's confounded by the Dalek or whether the Cybermen, whatever it was? How's the Master getting away with this, and how's he going to get out of it? But what the great thing about it is, and then a lot of us out here in Australia figured out, this story is actually Sherlock Holmes with a time travel machine. It really is Sherlock Holmes. The Master is Moriarty.
Particularly when you think if the Australian sort of default Doctor is the Pertwee era, you're absolutely right. You know, the Master was created specifically to be the Doctor's Moriarty. It's sort mm-hmm. of... And with the Doctor then being, what would you call it, exiled to Earth. You know, it was explicitly the intention behind it all. And I think that that dynamic, you know, we all love an archenemy, don't we? We all love to boo and to hiss, even though it may be simplistic, but it works. It never loses its punch, particularly when those two characters are seen to mean something to one another. You know that's the heart of it with the Doctor and the Master, and that's why they keep returning to the character and the relationships even now. I mean, I know that you, when the time we're talking about would be the 80s, whereas, you know, the show was originally censored back in the 60s, but those versions of Doctor Who continue to be shown with those omissions all the way through. You know, but to be fair, I mean, when you look back, specifically into the 1970s, it doesn't seem to have ever stifled Doctor Who's appeal. It certainly hasn't ever put off its fan base. It never stopped it from growing at exactly the same rate as the UK. When I noticed earlier on that at exactly the same time that the Doctor Who Appreciation Society was launching in the UK, you'd got something called the Doctor Who Club of Australia, launched in 1976 as well. So it just goes to show that whilst the censorship thing, you know, when you've created something and people nip and tuck bits of it away, it is incredibly frustrating. But at the end of the day, people still got to see Doctor Who. It still survived. It still endured, and people enjoyed those stories that you and those big visual ideas and the creative thinking behind Doctor Who, which you seem to have picked up on.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think, look, no matter what franchise it is, Doctor Who, Star Wars, Star Trek, whatever, you can't please everyone. And whatever you do put out, you know, is there's always going to be a ruffle feather out there somewhere. But you know what I say? They can eat concrete and harden up. That's what I reckon. Simple as that. They can toughen up a bit. And the world could do with a bit of that right now, with everything getting ruffled feathers over nothing these days. It's crazy. But what I love about the length and legacy through the 60s and 70s is that we got to get those reruns. I suppose a little bit like Star Trek, the original series, you know, although they had a much shorter run, cut quite short. Those were ones that we used to flick around on the channels when we first got the TV remotes. That, you know, that's what's funny. That's tied right into Doctor Who and all that, because we used to think that was the sonic screwdriver. You know, you'd be sitting there zapping the TV, as that. I even remember the ones where it was connected to the TV still with a cord.
I had one of those, remote control on a wire with just three big silver buttons in the middle.
That's it, yeah. Up and down on the channel and the volume usually with us. But anyway, I used to go from channel 2 and then you go to channel 9 and they'd be doing the original series. It might be season 2 and Mock Time. And you'd be, you know, Kirk versus Spock. You go, that's why you're not going to win here on Vulcan. Smash. And he goes, that's illogical, Jim. You know, they'd be going right at it. And I think that's the great thing. And then you can flip over another half hour later and then there's Pertwee going, right, how are we going to get our fish one? I don't know. You know, and that would be the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being a Doctor Who fan in the late 80s and into the 90s. And by that time, you know, home video was just starting to kick off and these episodes were slowly, very slowly trickling out of the archive for us to buy in the UK. But in organised fandom, at what we used to call the local groups where we'd all get together, you know, I was very young at the time, we all knew that you guys were getting to see these stories that had nobody in the UK had legally been able to watch these, sometimes in 20 years, and you were getting to see them every day of the week, consistently. And obviously VHS tapes did make their way back to the UK. They really did. Sometimes fourth or fifth generation transfers. And they were changing hands for up to, you know, five at a time. But we were so, so jealous. And, you know, and I gather that it did, as you said, it did totally continue. Mm-hmm. And certainly didn't seem to harm the appeal of present-day doctors to be paired up with John Pertwee. Because I thought, well, how would Colin Baker feel about being shown in tandem like that? But it obviously didn't have any diverse effect on any of the doctors that would come afterwards. No. And just seemed to guarantee Doctor Who that place in Australian viewing habits for an extended period of time. You guys were certainly showing it until long after the BBC themselves stopped showing it, which is,
It was a little bit funny, though, because you had things like, you'd have, 4 o'clock would be play school. I don't know if you guys have that over there. It's Australian Sesame Street, like, I suppose.
Yes, we had that too, the exact same show, but with British presenters, yeah.
Yeah, so as I said, you know, it's probably the same idea there. Then we had after that, Sooty, which is that little sock puppet show from you fellas over there.
Yeah, that's from ITV. Yeah, you're quite right.
Yeah. And then we would have a plastic, I can remember it was like a plastic model thing called Gumby. And Gumby was on for a little while. I don't know if that was a UK or US show.
I think he's Australian, American show. Sorry, you're Australian. American show, Gumby.
Gumby,
I could be wrong.
This was literally the same program for about 7 years. Then it would be Doctor Who. Then it would either be Ulysses 31, which was another anime, or Voltron. And you'd have that in tandem all the way through. And Space Battleship Yamato, better known as Star Blazers. And of course, Norman, if you're listening, yes, I'm a very big fan of that show. It's fantastic.
See, we got some of that, not all. Obviously, some of the UK shows, and I'm really, really, really familiar with. There's a lot of people maybe listening to this might be too. You know, they're big, iconic shows that also, you know, were also shown for many, many years. With Doctor Who, how did you feel about the actors themselves? We talked about the fictional world of Doctor Who. How about the actors themselves? Have you got? Because fandom exploded, and so did conventions, didn't they? Mm-hmm. And the actors would go to conventions all over the world. You know, have you got a favourite companion or cast of companions from Doctor Who past? And have you ever seen any at conventions?
I can't remember seeing any of the conventions apart from the Torchwood team, which we'll talk about soon. Which I met when I was doing work for my previous show, which was Ausfans Radio, and we caught up with part of the cast of that, and who have all gone on to great work after obviously Torchwood folded.
Yeah.
But I think Jenna Coleman was probably one of the best companions, I think. But as far as like the doctors themselves as actors, I've caught a lot of their work after they were in Doctor Who or just before. So Capaldi, I'd seen a lot of his work on TV and his work in film. I think he did that. Trying to think of the word of the name of the movie. It was the Brad Pitt zombie movie.
World War Z.
World War Z. That's the one.
Or Z, depending.
World War Z. Yeah, yeah. So I'd seen him in that, and then I'd seen a bit of the TV that he'd done some comedy. I think he'd done, and I think he was just fantastic. But then obviously seen Tennant. His Tennant's done quite a bit of Star Wars work as well. So we knew him through Fanthatrack crowd as well, so they're quite familiar.
When you say Star Wars work, it's voiceover work with David Tennant, isn't it? Was it the Clone Wars animated show?
That's right. He played a droid on a control ship that was sending Padawan learners out to build their first lightsabers with younglings or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. But he did really well. I thought he did a fantastic job in that. And then it's going to, I suppose, Eccleston, who I think is probably out of the doctors currently, is the one I know the best. And I know the run of the best due to being at art college and then coming home and watching those episodes on a really, my first big TV overhead, which is the big LED TV out here in Australia. And those they just look fantastic. I thought the look of those in particular on HD in Australia was just the bomb. It's fantastic.
I think when it came back in 2005, it's immediately grabbed pretty much everybody's attention the whole world over, and ABC in Australia, you know, they were there. You know, they'd carried on showing Doctor Who through the 90s. You know, and in the late 90s, they were the only channel that shown a full run of classic Doctor Who. I think it's from 95 through 99, they never stopped showing it, and they went right back to the beginning, showing it all. And ABC, when it came back, gave it a really prestigious time slot. It was like Saturday, 7:30, pretty much exactly the same as the BBC. And as you say, I mean, you caught it immediately. Was there a huge burst of energy and wave of sort of gratitude for the fact that it had come back over there as well?
It was huge. Like, here's how you could tell. Not only by the ratings, because the ratings were through the roof on those days, and I think ABC were doing reruns on the Sunday night, which you could usually catch at like 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So if anyone had missed it, they'd usually play another episode of it. This is before you had multiple channels of ABC. Now they've got about 9 channels of the same stuff, news channel, obviously kids channel, etc. Anyway, but they have a story out here called JB Hi-Fi, and the minute the DVDs were available after it had aired on TV, you couldn't get at the DVDs. That's how quick. And they were literally one whole wall of those Doctor Who episodes ready to go, but they were just flying off the shelves that quickly. And that is not something that happens on the ABC corner of JB Hi-Fi. It's usually pretty well stocked because it's an Australian DVD.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so it was a bit of a hit then. I mean, it hasn't really stopped from what I've seen. The Australian audience is as loyal as ever, probably even more so. ABC shows a companion series now called Whovians, doesn't it? Which is I suppose you could call it an after show. It's very much like the Talking Dead show, isn't it? That's run on AMC in America. So it's a host, a comedian, I understand, is quite a famous comedian in Australia. And a panel of three or four other people, and it's shown directly after an episode of Doctor Who, and they talk about it, don't they? And they sort of gently mock and enthuse about it, and talk about their own fandom with the show. And yeah, I've caught some of those through a friend, and no money has changed hands, just through a friend. And it's exactly the sort of show that we want in the UK. You know, I'm glad somebody's getting one. I'm glad it's being made, but I do wish there was a Whovians over here.
We'll just give you Neighbours and Home and Away instead. You can have Foster's too, because we don't drink that either.
Yeah, thanks for that. You don't drink Foster's? God, you're next. You'll be telling me the Tooth Fairy doesn't exist.
That's all right. We'll also give you Jason Donovan and Kylie Minogue. There you go. You can have that too.
Well, when you mentioned, Kylie, of course, she's been in Doctor Who. We're yet to get Jason. I have met Jason Donovan. I didn't get a chance to ask him about it, though. When we talk about companions, I thought you may mention Janet Fielding as Tegan, the Australian air hostess, you know. But
well, why not?
Yeah, a genuine Australian. And Katie Manning, of course, who is Joe Grant in your beloved Pertwee time, is actually an Australian citizen. She's back in the UK at the moment most of the time, but she's officially an Australian person. So, there's so many connections between Doctor Who and Australia. I mean, right back to the beginning, Anthony Coburn wrote the very first Doctor Who story. He was Australian. So it's a connection that continues as time goes on. You know, Pete McTighe, who's just written Kablam in the last season, you know, he's the showrunner, head writer and producer of Wentworth. I'm not sure what channel that's on. With you, I think it's I think that could be Foxtel as well.
Might be Fox on it. Has cable TV for that one, I think.
Such a big show, and it just goes to show. Even though I think Pete McTighe is English, but he's been in Australia for a long, long time.
Oh yeah.
And it just goes to show that it sort of feeds people's creativity the whole world over.
Oh, it does. And you know, folks, it is time for an Australian doctor. It's as simple as that. We had the flying doctors out here in Australia. Let's have a time traveling one. I think Hugh Jackman is up for the task.
You know what? I could actually see. I have no problem with international doctors myself, particularly now. And yeah, I think Hugh Jackman would be fantastic, particularly fighting off
Scottish doctors. We've had a couple of Scottish doctors, actually.
Yeah. Once we've opened up that whole question, and yeah, it's anybody's doctor now, anybody's at all. And I can imagine Hugh Jackman chasing down Cybermen. Not taking any of their nonsense, none of it, and maybe even singing a song while he was at it. Who knows? talking to the Cyberman, do you have a favourite Doctor Who monster? We talked about the Daleks earlier on. There's all those.
You know, if I look at it, like, not just from what the Daleks I like because they're iconic, but I'd say the Cyberman I like for not just the design reason and for how terrifying they are. But the fact that they've really influenced Star Trek as well with the Borg, that was an influence, without a doubt.
It's not very often you find a Trek fan, I'll admit that. Go on, carry on, keep talking.
but you look back on it and you think, you know, if something's come along that's so iconic, stands out, you know, especially something like the Cybermen, which, you know, especially en masse, they're just such an unpredictable villain. You know, or something that, you know, is going to compete against the Doctor, you know, to influence others like that, particularly when, you know, it's such a big thing, the Borg, and that influenced TNG to a whole new height. I mean, it's my era of
absolutely
Offering that I love so much. But then, years later, Matt Smith's Doctor then did, I think it was a comic they did about 4 or 5 years ago now. It was Doctor Who and Star Trek The Next Generation together, and it's one of the greatest graphic novels I've ever read. It is fantastic, and of course the Cybermember in that.
Yeah, you're talking about Assimilation, aren't you? The Doctor Who Star Trek comic from IDW that J.K. Woodward did the beautiful painted artwork for all that.
Beautiful inside. Absolutely beautiful. He's, very he's resemblance a, of the artwork and the characters just down pat. And as artists, we can attest to that.
Yeah, it's he's a fan of both shows. And you can see the attention to detail in every single brushstroke of that series. I heartily recommend that. It's a great bit of Doctor Who, extended universe Doctor Who history. Talking of the extended universe, do your tastes stretch outward into that broader Doctor Who universe? Now, if you do you read a lot of comics generally? Have you read any Doctor Who comics? Did you ever pick any of the books up when you were a child?
What I have done, and this is through getting into audiobooks and stuff like that, a couple of years ago when I was running Ausfans Radio Network, I was dealing with a lot of people that were, especially with voice actors and Star Wars actors, were doing, the agent deals and stuff like that to do interviews and things. And one of them got me onto Big Finish. And they'd been not working for Big Finish, but were fans of the work that was coming out. And then I heard some of the old doctors were coming back, particularly Paul McGann, to do some of these Big Finish audio productions. And so I have here and there picked up some of them through Audible, through the Audible app, and or even out here in Australia, we can get it at our local libraries. You can get them on CD. The productions are just fantastic. I think when I look back, put it up against like something of audio quality, it's always the NPR Star Wars radio dramas for me, or the audio dramas that they did for Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, and obviously Return of the Jedi. Because they're just, as far as audio, it's not just the voice actors, it's the symphony behind it, plus all of the actual Foley. The Foley was fantastic.
They're full soundscapes, aren't they? They're movies for the ears. And those Star Wars ones, they're quite... Well, they're different in key places, aren't they? It was reworked for audio, and yeah, I know exactly what you mean about the Doctor Who audios.
They're just works of art. I think some of them are better than the shows. I hate to say it, guys, but it's true. Big Finish have done such a bloody good job.
I think that particularly because Big Finish, when they first came into the market, Doctor Who wasn't on television, and they embraced every creative prospect for the show, for the characters, and expanded the storytelling in a very sensitive way, and kept it still Doctor Who. And I haven't met anybody who's come to it and found the audios first, but I bet there are people out there. I bet there are people out there who have, just like they did in print. And the fact that you don't count yourself as like a major hardcore Doctor Who fan, that they've come your way. Now, I'm glad you've recommended them, because there are still people out there who still don't view it as proper Doctor Who. But I'll sing the praises for as long as anybody. I absolutely love Big Finish, and we'll be talking about a bit of Big Finish in a few episodes' time with a bit of luck. That's something else we're working on, and we've got so many irons in the fire for Type 40 later on in the year. But aside from discussing Doctor Who here on Type 40, here it comes, there are a wide variety of other shows, Adam. This is going to be news to you. There are other shows you may also enjoy listening to here on the Fandom Podcast Network. So listen to this little lot and come back for more of Adam and myself after this break.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with host Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal Podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
A feast for the ears, Adam, a feast for the ears. Anything stand out to you in particular from that little lot?
I think the biggest one is probably, I think it's called Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Yeah, I'll have to listen out for that, yeah. Okay.
And Blood of Kings, I hear they're talking about, who is it, the new Highlander, director Chad Stahelski, putting together Highlander with, I think Kevin told me it was that, who is that actor? Christoph Waltz is going to be the new Highlander. This is big news, Kevin. I can't believe it's happening, you know. Christoph Waltz, oh my God, it's great.
We can only keep our fingers crossed for that one. But yeah, Blood of Kings will be all over that. Every single swing of a sword, if that film ever does come to pass, I'm sure Kevin will be all over it like a rash. Fantastic stuff. I wanted to ask you about Torchwood as well, Adam, because yeah. I gather that, you know, we're talking about the Doctor Who universe.
Yeah.
But that original spin-off, the original spin-off that actually went to a series anyway, Torchwood, I gather this is also something that you're really fond of that means a lot to you.
Oh, without a doubt. Look, Torchwood came out just after I finished art college, and I was working, basically doing design through the day, and then at night times I was working in a restaurant as a manager to sort of pay for the hex fees for university. And so you come home, you had things like X-Files was in reruns at the time, but then you'd be watching Captain Jack Harkness and the rest of the team solve all these mysteries. And it was different from Doctor Who, that he had a team, a larger team than the Doctor had. He did not just companions. And they're all specialists, and that's what I loved about it—the fact that they all had their own little sort of eccentricities, if you like. And then they'd go out, and it's in the same universe. That's what I loved about it too. It pulled in a lot of people from different, I think, parts of sci-fi as well. You know, we had people from Buffy the Vampire Slayer coming in and stuff like that too. So it was huge. It was darker, more adult. They couldn't show it early in the night; it had to be shown after 9 p.m. But I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, that was James Masters, wasn't it, who played Spike in Buffy.
He turned up
in that. And there was Alan Dale was in it, of course, an Australian legend. We love Alan Dale.
Yeah.
Whether it's as Jim Robinson or as the various other other ne'er-do-wells he's played in series like 24. And, of course, he's been in Star Trek, hasn't he?
Star Trek movie,
was it? Yeah. So to have him in anything Doctor Who related was a bit of an honour. But, yeah, I mean... When it comes to Torchwood, I think it's got that Mission Impossible aesthetic about it.
It does.
And yeah, it was a little naughtier, and it was harder to market because, you know, I'd got very small children at the time who were mad Doctor Who fans, and to explain to them that yes, there was a Doctor Who spin-off, and no, you can't watch it was really, really difficult as a parent. I mean, how did it fare in Australia? Where did they show it? Was it still on ABC?
It was ABC still, but it was shown much later at night. I think they tried at first to get it on one of the free-to-air networks outside of the ABC. I think Channel 7 tried to pick it up first, but the rights were just tied up with ABC, it being part of, obviously, a BBC production. So there was part of the first season shown on Channel 7. And it was really shown... ads were flicking all over the place late at night, around 7 till 9, for about 2 weeks before it aired. And then that's how I found out about it. I went, what is this show? I had no idea it was tied to Doctor Who at the time. It took me about 3 or 4 episodes to really figure out what this was, you know, and the fact that, hey, this is cooler. I hate to say it's cooler than Doctor Who. That's my natural thought of it. But then a couple of years later, after getting into podcasting, I met Naoko Mori, Bern Gorman, who's, oh my crikey, he's gone on to some brilliant stuff with Pacific Rim and many other shows now, obviously, too, playing Owen Harper, and of course she was playing Toshiko. And we had Gareth David Lloyd there as well, one of these supernovas, which is a huge culture, pop culture event out here.
It's your Comic Con, really, isn't it? It's the equivalent of the San Diego Comic Con.
It really is. It may be so bloody old at the events too. I'd be pulling up stuff in the interviews from, you know, way earlier and stuff like that. We had people like themselves there. We had people from G.I. Joe, the show that would eventually, obviously, the movie that eventually really didn't take off. Let's face it, it took a reboot and a sequel. And then having that, the G.I. Joe itself then had Ray Park and a few others, but they were all there at the event. And we get to see a certain cast member of Orville there as well.
Oh, who's that?
Well, in G.I. Joe 2, she was cast in it. And obviously this was well before Orville. And I was bringing up the movie... was it Red Dawn that she was in? So we're talking, of course, of Adrienne Palicki.
She was in that.
Yeah, she's quite a tough girl. She was talking about the stunt work and everything like that. And Wave got into the interview and I said, so, done a bit of punching and kicking and done a bit of work on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever it was she was in at the time. But I said, Red Dawn. And she goes, yeah, why did you Australians have to leave it for 2 years before you put it out? And I'm like, well, it wasn't just Australia. It was one of those films that just got kept back and back. It's quite good. And, of course, it had Thor in it. And actually, I have to say, G.I. Joe 2 wasn't that bad. It was actually not a bad little flick. That's where we saw the guys from, obviously, from Torchwood. And some of the stories they had was just fantastic.
I thought you were going to mention Christopher Eccleston then, because he was in that first G.I. Joe movie, wasn't he? The Ninth Doctor.
That's right. Yeah, he certainly was. And I think he's great in that. I loved him in Heroes. I think Heroes.
Yes, so did I. Yeah, he played Claude, the Invisible Man, in Heroes, didn't he? Not long after leaving Doctor Who.
Went straight over to the attention leaving Doctor Who at the time that he did, which I never understood until I saw a video. I think it was with him in a tea shop somewhere in London. I think it was, where he's talking about how, you know, I think it was just misconceptions of what was going on behind the scenes. You know, it was basically miscommunication completely that made him want to leave.
Yeah, it's a hell of a story, and one day I'm sure we'll know the whole twists and turns of it. I mean, we find out new things about this all the time, and I suppose it's the end of the day, it's none of our business, is it? But at the time, as fans, at the time, we couldn't help but take it a little bit personally because of how the story broke, when it broke, and what it could potentially have meant for the show. You know, it all seemed to be going so well, and then the star's not there anymore. But of course, everything did turn out perfectly well in the end. So, and I think most of us still harbour that desire that one day Christopher Eccleston will return to the role, return to the show somehow, somewhere, somewhere in the future. Talking of which, Adam, Doctor Who continues to endure globally. Do you think there'll ever be a time where it will stop? Do you see, as somebody who's a general observer of all things science fiction, it's one of the big three, isn't it? And Star Wars, Star Trek, and Doctor Who, is it still one of the big three in the age of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Well, it's one of the big four for sure. Like there's Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, and Mad Max, of course. That's what they're saying. Now, of course, I'll drop a Mad Max story in a second and why I bring it up. But, I think the only evolution from here is once, if it ever tires of being a TV show, it will move into the feature films. It's the logical conclusion is to go that way. Obviously, we've had a movie before, a TV movie, but I think they're ready to take that next level. And, if it was in the 90s, it would have been a Pierce Brosnan Doctor or something like that. I mean, it would have been that next level of actor.
Wow. Well, it's funny. You could say there have been three Doctor Who movies if you count the two with Peter Cushing in the 60s, as well as the McGann, that were actually made theatrically. And I'm sure somebody listening to this will know. In the 90s, there was nearly a Doctor Who movie which was going to star, guess who?
Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan. Yeah, so you know, in a parallel dimension, out there somewhere, I'm sure that film was made. Who knows? Yeah, because times do change, and like you say, when Doctor Who came back in 2005 and shifted all those DVDs. I mean, for a start, nothing really shifts DVDs anymore, does it? But the next big thing is never more than 4 or 5 years away at the most, is it? And you know, I mentioned Game of Thrones earlier on, and with that having wrapped up, one of the questions that we've been asked over the last few weeks is what's going to come next. And it's very difficult. It's next to impossible to predict what's going to come
Mad
next.
Max.
It's gotta be Mad Max, Mad Max 5, Mad Max the series, Mad Max the spin-offs, maybe a prequel about Mad Max. I would watch that. I would so watch that. I really
would. Would you?
Yeah.
You'd watch one of these things go, yeah.
I'd watch The Interceptor go anywhere. I'd watch Mel Gibson and Tom Hardy in the same Mad Max film. Make like a Day of the Doctor kind of anniversary special. Who knows? You know, George Miller can make anything happen. If he wants to badly enough.
We need the Wasteland Doctor. That's what we need. We need a rough doctor that goes to the wasteland and goes, bloody hell, what's the TARDIS doing here, mate?
I think that sounds a lot like the kind of thing that John Hurt would have got up to. We'd have got a full series of his Doctor, yeah. So, okay, then here's a parting shot for you. Here's one for you. Cast your Doctor Who, the motion picture, now. I want a Doctor, companions, bad guy, and a director. Go.
All right. The director is going to be David Fincher.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to go backwards this way. So I'm going to go, villain will be, I'm going to try and pick somebody a bit, you know, I always pick somebody from the early days, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pick, let's go with Sean Bean. As the master. The companion will be, really think about this one. The companion will be, who played Arya Stark?
Oh, you're talking about Maisie Williams.
Yeah. Maisie Williams in there. I think she's ready to go into movies and stuff like that for sure. And I think it's good to get somebody that could, if they're going to do a series of movies, somebody young enough that can span maybe 2 or 3 movies as they, you know, go through the decade. But for the Doctor, I'm going to go with the tried and true Sean Pertwee.
So Sean Pertwee versus Sean Bean.
Sean Bean's going to die.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, this is it. I mean, he could regenerate as part of the plot. And it's interesting that you mentioned Maisie Williams. You know, she's been in Doctor Who, had quite a prominent part in Series 9, I think it was, of Doctor Who, where she played a character called Ashilda, who wasn't a companion, but was quite a complex character. She was excellent in that. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I've no doubt. We've got the New Mutants film, which I think she shot about 2.5 years ago. We're still waiting for that to come out. I'm sure there's going to be bigger and probably better things to come from her.
Oh, yeah.
And I, you know, the prospect of David Fincher, I thought you were going to go really loud then with a Michael Bay or a Roland Emmerich, but a David Fincher Doctor Who movie, I would love that. I think that
it'd definitely be bleak, but it'd be good.
Yeah, he's one of my favourite filmmakers. I think, I don't know if he watches Doctor Who. Let's face it, he's bound to have heard of Doctor Who, and God, yeah, I'd love them to approach him for that.
I heard he's a bit of a sci-fi nut, so he probably has. He's worked on Jedi and all that, so
he really is. He's definitely a genre fan. Yeah, so I those are excellent choices. So I'm not going to even try and follow that. I'll be back with another Type 40 fairly soon in whatever dimension. Watch out for that wherever you found this show. Please search for the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, leave us a review so new fans can find us easier if you can. We'd like 5-star reviews, of course, but we love feedback. In general, Adam, constructive feedback, always welcome, is it not?
It is. Yeah. It always is. And, folks, let me tell you, you're going to enjoy a show very, very soon. Dan Hadley is going to be joining me on another episode of Lethal Mullet Podcast very, very soon. Thrown to the deep end, into the chaos, no script, no nothing. and he has to choose the movie that we talk about. That's right.
I can't wait. I can't wait. So watch out for that in the Fandom Podcast Network master feed on the Podbean app, on Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. And yeah, in the meantime, contact any of us directly if you wish. Email us type40doctorwho@gmail.com, Twitter at type40doctorwho, Instagram at type40doctorwho, Kyle Wagner's on Twitter at akylew, and on Instagram at akylefandom. I am on Instagram as danhadley_, and I'm in the Spacebook on Facebook. Thanks again to Adam for coming on. Have you enjoyed yourself?
Thanks, buddy. It was great. And to all you good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
One more question. Where exactly do you want me to drop you off in time and space?
Drop me off in 1887 in Colorado.
Okay. Got it. You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all right. Not sure. Can't guarantee the weather. remind us again where we can find you.
You can catch us at OB Pop Culture on Twitter and Instagram, at fanthtracks.com, and of course on fbnet.podbean.com.
Thanks again, Adam, and thanks to you for listening. Join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Type 40, where we always have the time if you have the space. We'll be right back.